ಸ್ವಾನಪಿ ವಿಪಾರ್ಷೇ ರಥೇನ ಸ ಧನಂಜಯ ಸಾಥಾಯ ವ್ಯಾರೋಚತಾ ನೃಪ ಕುಬೇರ ಇವ ಗೂಯಕಾಯ ಭಗವಾನಪಿ ವಿಪ್ರಾಶೇ ರಥೇನ ಸ ಧನಂಜಯ ಸಥಾಯ ವ್ಯಾರೋಚತಾ ನೃಪ ಕುಬೇರ ಇವ ಗೂಯಕಾಯ.
O sage amongst the Brahmins, Lord Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, also followed seated on a chariot with Arjuna. Thus King Yudhisthira appeared very aristocratic, like Kubera surrounded by his companions, the Guhyakas.
Drishtva nipatitam bhaumau divaschutam ivamaram pranemu pandava bhishmam sanuga saha chakrina.
Seeing him, Bhishma, lying on the ground like a demigod fallen from the sky, the Pandavas, King Yudhisthira, along with his younger brothers and Lord Krishna, bowed down before him. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Krishna was also a younger cousin of Maharaj Yudhisthira, as well as the intimate friend of Arjuna. But all the family members of the Pandavas knew Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord, although conscious of His supreme position, always behaved in a humanly custom, and so He also bowed down before the dying Bhishmadeva, as if He were one of the younger brothers of King Yudhisthira.
Om Agyan
Bhishma, lying on the ground, like a demigod fallen from the sky, the Pandava king Yudhisthira, along with his younger brothers and Lord Krishna, bowed down before him. The gentle nature of the great devotees of the Lord is here so wonderfully exhibited by the Pandavas. However great, successful we may be in our achievements in this world, the natural humility to bow down before respectable persons always remains. In the material state of consciousness, we may bow down, we may humble ourselves before someone, but we aspire to take a higher position. And when we achieve that higher position, then we expect for everyone to bow to us. Just like in Indian history, there is Shah Jahan. He was the king. And when his son Aurangzeb, by his very, very crooked methods, he captured the throne, he did not bow before his father, but rather he imprisoned him. He imprisoned him and tortured him just to let his father know who was the king at the time. Similarly, in politics, we find when someone attains a big, big position, he no longer considers himself subordinate to anyone, unless by force he is subjugated by a higher power. And even in spiritual life, amongst many of the impersonalists, their idea is they bow down before the deity, they bow down before Guru, but through the blessings of deity and Guru, gradually they become deity and Guru. They become God. And therefore there's no need to bow down before the deity, because you are the deity. And even if you do bow down to the deity, you're not bowing down to the deity anymore. You're actually bowing down to yourself. Something like bowing down before your image in a mirror. It is that mentality. Recently, I was talking with one person, and they were telling me one very, very great, according to their standard, saint. Such a great saint, they were saying. That this person was so highly realized when that this person was worshipping Kali. And when it was time to offer the garland to the deity of Kali, he put the garland on himself. Because after all, when you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches and twigs are satisfied. And since I am Bhagavan, I am God, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Mata Sarvam Prabhartate, I am the source of everything that exists. If I worship myself, if I bow down to myself, there's no need to bow down to anyone else. And even if I do, for some social etiquette, bow down to someone else, it's actually in consciousness that I'm bowing down to my own self. So there is not much sense of humility in this mentality. And this is the way the world is. Even amongst athletes, someone will train under somebody, and then they will defeat them. Then they will take their crown, their champion trophy, and then no more etiquette. I have achieved your position. So this is the material conception of life. Everyone is striving to have higher and higher status of respectability, and we will honor and respect those who can help us to get higher statuses. But once we attain a status above them, then there's no inclination. So in the same way, the world is going on. But here we see the contrary thinking of the Vaishnavas. Bhishma was never king. He was grandfather. When Yudhisthira had nothing, when he was a small child, along with the Pandavas, he bowed down to this great soul. And here, Maharaj Yudhisthira is in the highest status in the entire world. He is the king of the planet, the emperor. And the Pandavas are all sitting beside him on the throne. They have been victorious over all the world. They have no competition. There is no such thing as a politician or a king in this day and age with such a position as Yudhisthira. There may be dictators who somehow or other rule their countries, but they cannot rule even the boundaries of the countries next to them. but Yudhisthira had complete reign over the entire planet. And yet, Bhishma, he was in the most helpless, defeated condition by material standards. He was laying on a bed of arrows in a battlefield, utterly defeated, helpless. He couldn't do anything. And yet Yudhisthira Maharaj is coming to him, and with great humility, honest, genuine from his heart, he's bowing down. Not only Yudhisthira, but Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is bowing down before his own devotee. What do they hope to get from Bhishma Dev when he's on a bed of arrows? They are bowing down out of true love and respect. There's no motivation. There's no aspiration for anything but to receive the blessings of such a great soul and to honor him. And this is the great mystery, how the Supreme Absolute Truth, Sri Krishna, is taking such a humble position to bow down before his devotee. Srila Prabhupada explains that he was acting as if he was one of the younger brothers of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Of course, those who do not understand the science of Krishna consciousness properly, they can interpret that this is evidence that Krishna is an ordinary man, that he bows down. Why will God bow down to anyone? But bhakti is such a sublime philosophy that we can understand that when the Lord bows down, he is exhibiting one of his supreme opulences, the opulence of renunciation. We should know that the six opulences of the Lord, whatever manifestation, are always meant for the ultimate pleasure and love of his devotees. Krishna is the reservoir of all beauty. But that beauty, Krishna does not enjoy his beauty himself. He expands himself as Srimati Radharani. She expands herself as the Sakis, the Manjaris, the Gopis. Krishna expands himself as unlimited Jiva Atmas. And in this process, these separated entities emanating from Sri Krishna, who are all eternally individual, unique personalities, they are all meant to enjoy loving pleasures of exchanges with Krishna. Therefore, when Krishna reveals his supreme beauty, he does so for the pleasure of his devotees. When Krishna reveals his supreme strength, he does so for the pleasure of his devotees. We read in Srimad Bhagavatam about the beauty of Sri Krishna, how when he would stand in his threefold bending form with his beautiful bluish swarthy complexion, head bedecked with peacock feather, beautiful, beautiful lotus-like eyes reaching practically to his ears, and he would play his flute, and the sweetness of that form, the sweetness of that sound was so infinitely, inconceivably beautiful that anyone who would see him, anyone who would hear the ambrosial sound of his flute, would simply become utterly intoxicated and maddened in ecstatic love and completely lose all interest in everything and anything else of this entire creation. The gopis of Vrindavan, not only did they were they indifferent to the things of this world, including their own children, husbands, fathers, mothers, in-laws, home, nice foods, everything. They became indifferent. They even became indifferent to Lord Narayan himself, the Lord of Vaikuntha. This is the power of Krishna's beauty. And it was all meant simply to attract the hearts and the love and the ecstasy, to awaken ecstasy in the heart of his devotees. And when Krishna exhibited his great power of strength, what is Krishna's need? He only does it to give ecstasy to his devotees, to attract the hearts of all living beings. When Krishna lifted Govardhan, Giriraj, the devotees, as they were watching him, standing, holding this huge mountain, 7-year-old boy with the little finger of his left hand, effortlessly. Srila Prabhupada was once at Rockefeller Square in New York. Have any of you ever been to Rockefeller Square in New York? It's a very famous place. And in front, there is a big, big steel statue of Atlas. Atlas is considered to be a very strong person. And Atlas is holding up the entire planet Earth on his back. And his eyes are straining, and his muscles are bulging, and he's perspiring like anything. And he's called the Mighty Atlas. When Srila Prabhupada saw, he laughed. He said, just see how he's struggling and straining to hold this little planet Earth. He said, when Krishna holds the Govardhan Hill, he's smiling. There's no perspiration. There's no mundane muscles bulging. He's simply holding it as if effortlessly. And one of his mere expansions, Ananta Shesh, is holding entire universes on his head. And he's not struggling or straining or huffing or puffing. He's just chanting the glories of the Lord in ecstasy. So this is Krishna. When Krishna exhibits his supreme opulence of strength, he does so to give ecstasy to his devotees, to attract love, which is the source of all ecstasy, from the hearts of his devotees. And similarly, when Krishna exhibits his divine opulence of knowledge, when he spoke in Kurukshetra, the Bhagavad Gita, he did not do it for himself. He did it for his devotees. He did it to give ecstasy to his devotees. Because Ananda Mayo Vyasat, we are all seeking ecstasy. That is the constitutional position of every living entity, to seek ecstasy. And the whole purpose of life is to find that ecstasy. But as long as we try to find it through our own selfish pursuits, we cannot find real ecstasy. But when we utterly surrender ourselves in loving devotion to the Supreme, then the natural ecstasy of the soul is awakened. So Krishna spoke the Gita to teach us the way by which we could surrender to him and experience the supreme ecstasy of his loving service. When Krishna exhibits his divine opulence of wealth, he created the 16,108 beautiful palaces. It was to please his queens, and he expanded himself in each palace to give ecstasy and love to his queens, and also to reveal to all of the world how wonderful is Krishna, how great is Krishna. Beauty, knowledge, strength, fame. Krishna's fame is manifested through his devotees throughout eternal past, present, and future. They are always glorifying his names. They are always glorifying his pastimes. And in such glorification, they taste the nectar of real devotion.
Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu.
So Krishna's fame is also revealed by him to give ecstasy and love to his devotees. And similarly, his renunciation. And here we find such a beautiful exhibition of this. Although even the greatest of the gods must bow down before Krishna, Lord Brahma himself, the original father of this entire universe, came down from his Brahma Loka, Satya Loka, the topmost planet. He tried to test Krishna after Krishna killed Aghasura. He was thinking, who is this Krishna? Let me see. If he is God, then let the world know how great he is. But after Krishna manifested himself as all the calves and children that Brahma stole, Brahma realized that with all his powers to create all the planets and all the species of life within this entire universe, he could not compete with what he just witnessed Krishna had done. And Krishna was just a small child. So Brahma came down with his four heads, bedecked with four royal crowns, and bowed to the feet, the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. How wonderful. How beautiful. The greatest personalities bow before Krishna. And he is worthy. He is ultimately the only person really worthy of worship. And if anybody else accepts worship, it should only be on his behalf. Any living being accepts worship for himself, however great and powerful that person may be, is condemned. Because Krishna is the only worshipable personality by all living beings. And what is the Guru and what is the Vaishnava? Why do we worship them? We worship them because they are the representatives of the only one supreme worshipable person, Krishna. They are not keeping our worship for themselves. They are delivering it to Krishna. In fact, in this world, by the arrangement of Krishna, we have really no means of worshipping Krishna except through his messengers. But as soon as we think the worship is for me, then we are condemned in the eyes of God. And our life becomes inauspicious. So Krishna is the supreme most worshipable personality. All worship for everyone is ultimately meant only to be brought to the lotus feet of Krishna. And yet here we see Krishna, supreme renunciation, bowing down before his devotee, taking a position not as the supreme absolute truth, the controller of all controllers, but he's playing the role of the younger cousin of Yudhisthira. And he really did. He became Yudhisthira's servant. Some of you are businessmen, you know, in your office, if you want to send a message to someone, usually you send one of your clerks. You don't send some big person. You send one of your clerks. So similarly, when Yudhisthira wanted to send message to Duryodhana, he chose Krishna. Krishna volunteered. He became the message carrier for Yudhisthira. He became the driver of chariot for Arjuna, Parathasarathi. And here, he's bowing his head along with the Pandavas to Bhishma Dev. It's not that he's taking a high position. It's not that he has a royal asana and he's bowing down to Bhishma like that and the Pandavas are on the ground. He's taking an equal position, a subordinate position to Yudhisthira.
And on the ground, he's going down and putting his head before Bhishma. This is supreme renunciation. To take such a humble position when you're in such a supreme position. But why does he do it? To give pleasure, to give ecstasy to his devotees. Not only to Bhishma, but to all living beings who see how Krishna does everything in his supreme position. All of his pastimes are simply for the ecstatic pleasure of his devotees, bhaktivatsala. So those who consider the impersonal path of self-realization, they are unfortunate, because although they may, after many, many births of hard labor and great intellectual gymnastics, they may be relieved of the miseries of this material existence. Most of them simply talk. They juggle so much words, but they have no realization at all. Just like this particular person, after we talked, I said, "I hope to see you soon." And this person said, "Well, you are me and I am you, so we are always seeing each other." I said, "Hare Krishna." So that may be, but if that person, if their child dies, then they're going to weep and cry. So who's dead? If the child's dead, that means you're dead. Or you're alive, that means your child's alive. So in this way, it's all so much words. But there's no realization, there's no reality behind all these people. They just talk. Most of India is all this talk. But even if they do, somehow or other, succeed to achieve mukti, then no more pain, no more suffering. But the sweet ras of bhakti that we are discussing here today, they have no entrance. They have no real conception. Anandam buddhi varadhanam pratipadam bhunam ratashvara. And it is this ecstasy, ananda, that the soul is longing for. Nothing else. How Krishna is so perfect, so wonderful. In other religions, they discuss God as the Supreme. And they discuss his powers of how he operates and controls this material creation. But the power in which he brings ecstatic love and devotion between himself and his devotees, that sweetness, that charm that the heart is longing for, they cannot understand. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is the most perfect, the highest of all scriptures, because it exclusively deals with these supreme opulences of Krishna in great detail, culminating in Krishna's Vrindavan Leela. As Krishna is bowing down before Bhishma, Bhishma, he knows Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's been waiting for him for a long time in this bed of arrows. In the winter, for those of you who have been to Kurukshetra, the winters are quite severe and cold. He was laying there in the month of January, just waiting for Krishna, all alone. Such dedication, such devotion. And he knew in his heart of hearts that Krishna will come to me. He didn't have to send a fax or a telegram or a letter. "Krishna, please come, I'm waiting for you." He knew within his heart of hearts that Krishna, as his Paramatma, was fully aware of his condition and his desire, and he knew the greatness of Krishna. He knew how Krishna always ultimately fulfills the desires of his devotees. So he didn't ask. He had complete faith that Krishna will come. Krishna will save me when I need him most at the time of my death. There was no doubt. Similarly, we must have this faith. Through hearing of these glorious narrations, it instills faith within us. It awakens the natural faith the soul has for Sri Krishna. Guru Maharaj would often say, you do not have to ask Krishna for anything but service, because he already knows whatever you require. He already knows your every desire. Why not just have faith that he will do whatever is best for you? Why ask him for material benedictions? It means we don't really have faith. A devotee has faith that Krishna will perfectly protect me according to his vision. Krishna will perfectly provide whatever is best for me. We simply pray, Krishna, let me always remember you with such faith. Let me always serve you with such faith. Let me always chant your holy names with such faith. And most of all, let me be the servant of the servant of your servants, because I know that that is what will please you most. This is the consciousness of the great souls, and this is what we should be aspiring for. Bhishma was waiting with complete confidence that Krishna will come. And Krishna came, and he bowed down before Bhishma. And Bhishma was in such a predicament that he could not even bow down before Krishna. Sometimes when a great personality bows down to you, naturally you bow down to them. But Bhishma could not even bow down to Krishna, except within his heart of hearts. Physically, he was unable to move. He had to accept Krishna's love in this form. And he knew. He knew that Krishna is setting a precedent, and as his servant, I must accept. In a similar way, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bowed down to Ishwarapuri, his Guru Maharaj, and surrendered to him, Ishwarapuri understood that he is Krishna. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He told Lord Chaitanya that ever since I first met you in Navadvip, I've been weeping in ecstatic love. I cannot stop thinking of you for a moment, day and night. I'm only thinking of you. And whenever I think of you, the same ecstatic emotions erupt in my heart is when I think of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya asked, please give me initiation into mantra. Ishwarapuri told the Lord, I will give you my entire life, my entire soul. My existence is surrendered to you. If you desire initiation, I will give you initiation as an offering of love and service. He accepted a superior position because he knew that Lord Chaitanya wanted to teach the world the importance that however great, even if you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which you never will be, but even the Supreme Personality of Godhead bows before Guru Maharaj and the great souls. So what to speak of the rest of the world? To inquire submissively, render service. Tadvidi pranipatina pariprashnena sevya. Krishna instructs us. And Krishna, in his form of Lord Chaitanya, taught us how to do it. Whoever we are, When we come before a great personality, a real sadhu, there is no question of what our status is within this world. We were discussing yesterday, Maharaj Prataparudra, Yudhisthira Maharaj. They are following in the footsteps of Krishna, of Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya, who themselves humble themselves and bow down before the saintly persons. Sometimes Lord Chaitanya was so much in this mood of honoring and respecting his seniors, his superiors, for several reasons. One is he wanted to set the example for everyone that you must humble yourself to serve and inquire submissively from superiors. And two is there is an inner ecstasy of love in the ras that the Lord experiences and also brings about in the heart of his devotee when he takes such a subordinate position. But sometimes the devotees, it is very difficult for them. There is this beautiful narration of Sri Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya was the disciple of Sri Madhavendra Puri. You know, when Madhavendra Puri was on his way from Vrindavan to Jagannath Puri on the order of Sri Gopal, whose expansion we have in our temple. According to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the original name of this murti is Sri Gopal. This is the name that he personally told Madhavendra Puri. So on his way to collect the sandalwood and camphor, he stopped through Shantipur. And there Sri Advaita Acharya, knowing, even though Advaita Acharya is Mahavishnu himself, along with Sadashiva in one form, he surrendered to Madhavendra Puri. And he accepted Diksha. Therefore, he was the godbrother of the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya. And according to the principles of Vaishnava etiquette, one should always offer the same type of respect to the godbrothers and godsisters of the spiritual master as one offers to the spiritual master himself. Lord Chaitanya told us that the observance of Vaishnava etiquette is what makes a devotee's heart beautiful before God. So Mahaprabhu himself observed this etiquette. Brahmananda Bharati, Paramananda Puri, Advaita Acharya, he always honored them with great, great respect. So Advaita, he always treated like his superior. But Advaita Acharya always considered himself the most insignificant eternal servant of Lord Chaitanya. So he was in a particular mood that it was very difficult for him to accept worship from Lord Chaitanya. So he was always aspiring for some opportunity to worship the Lord. But it was difficult because Advaita Acharya was an old man and Lord Chaitanya was very young and strong. This is all their lila, of course. So Lord Chaitanya would try to get the dust from the feet of Advaita, and Advaita would try his best to stop him, but he was no match against Mahaprabhu. And when Advaita Acharya would try to get the dust from Lord Chaitanya's feet, he could never do it. Lord Chaitanya would stop him. So he was very much upset. "You are my Lord, I want to serve you. You are always serving me. This is terrible." So one time, when Lord Chaitanya was dancing in kirtan, he fell in ecstatic love and went in trance, unconscious. And Advaita Acharya took the Lord's lotus feet. And he not only put his head on his feet, but he smeared the dust of Lord Chaitanya's feet on every limb of his body. And he was weeping in ecstasy to have this opportunity. And then Lord Chaitanya came out of his unconscious state of ecstasy. And the kirtan began. And Lord Chaitanya said, "There's something wrong with this kirtan. Did someone take dust from my feet?" And the devotees were afraid to say anything, because they knew if they lied to Lord Chaitanya, that's a great offense. But if they told on Advaitacharya, that's also a great offense. So it was a great dilemma. Sometimes in Vaishnava relationships, these dilemmas take place, where you're caught in between who to offend, and you do not want to offend anyone. So the devotees were silent. So Advaitacharya saw this. So he said, "I have taken the dust from your feet. Today I have stolen from the thief. You are like a thief, Mahaprabhu. You are always stealing dust from my feet. But today I have stolen from you. But you only put the dust on your head. But I covered my whole body with the dust of your lotus." So Lord Chaitanya became very internally satisfied. But externally he became very angry and sad. He said, "What? You? The godbrother of my Guru Maharaj? The disciple of Madhavendra Puri? Superior, greatest acharya of the Brahmins? You took the dust from my feet?" Said Advaitacharya, "Out of compassion and love, you called for me to come down to this world. And now I've come down to this world, and now you are behaving in such a way to destroy me." He said, "I know you are Shiva himself. You are the destroyer of all the worlds. And now you have come to destroy me." In this way they had a nice loving relationship. Another time, Advaitacharya was so so sad that the Lord was always respecting him and honoring him. He wanted to be accepted as a servant. You honor and glorify a superior, but you chastise a servant. So Advaitacharya was trying to think how to change his mood from bowing down and honoring me and taking dust from my feet to chastising me. When that day comes, then I will know he has accepted me as his servant. He tried every possible means, but nothing was successful, because the Lord was so tolerant of anything Advaita did, and he always honored him and bowed before him. But he knew that there's one thing that the Supreme Lord does not tolerate, and that's Mayavad philosophy. So he began preaching from the Yoga Vashishta, which teaches specifically that bhakti is not very important. Jnan is important. And by following this process, you can become God. And you can eternally lose your individuality, your form, and you could merge into the impersonal existence of the Supreme, and thus lose any trace of attitude for service or love for God. So Advaitacharya, in Santipur, he went back to his home and he started preaching very boldly. He was having big, big lectures, advertising and everything, preaching that you are God, I am God, everything is God. There's no individuality beyond this material existence. And Lord Chaitanya heard the news that Advaitacharya is preaching Yoga Vashishta, Mayavad philosophy. It's impossible. Not Advaitacharya. Not such a great personality. But he heard so many rumors from so many people that he took Lord Nityananda Prabhu and said, let us go to Shantipur. I want to visit Advaitacharya.
for pastimes took place on the way. And when they arrived at Advaitacharya's house, they came just at the time when he was giving class. And he was preaching all Mayavad philosophy. And when he saw Lord Chaitanya, he became even more enthusiastic to emphasize the Mayavad conclusions. Lord Chaitanya was sitting there. He couldn't believe his ears. Advaitacharya, the greatest of the Vaishnavas, is preaching like this. He was explaining that you will merge into the indivisible form, into the indivisible formless existence. That is the perfection of life. Everything else is subordinate to that. And then Advaitacharya began to explain. Lord Chaitanya asked him, "What is your opinion of bhakti?" He said, "Ah, bhakti. Bhakti is useless. It's meaningless without jnan. Jnan is the all in all. Jnan is the perfection. Jnan is the support. Jnan is the foundation. Bhakti is just an insignificant corollary subordinate to jnan to help us. To help us on an immature stage of neophyte consciousness. Bhakti will help us to get higher jnan. And with that jnan, we realize that I am God, I am the Supreme." He said this to Lord Chaitanya. Not only did he say it, but he said it with a thunderous voice full of conviction. And when Lord Chaitanya heard this, he became so angry that he jumped onto to the raised dais and he dragged Advaitacharya to the ground and began to beat him with his own hands. And he was beating him and beating him and beating him. Meanwhile, Haridas Thakur, he was just laughing, thinking Advaitacharya's, all his desires are being fulfilled. And Nityananda Prabhu also. But Advaitacharya's wife, Sita Thakurani, she understood this is the Lord's mercy, but it was very inconceivable mercy. So she was crying, she was weeping, as well as her children, Achyutananda and others. They were crying out, "Please, he's an old man. You're going to kill him. Please stop beating him." But Lord Chaitanya continued to beat him and beat him and beat him. And Advaitacharya, as he was being beaten, he was in ecstasy, laughing like anything and crying in ecstasy. And then finally, when Lord Chaitanya stopped beating him, Advaitacharya said, "Today, the perfection of my life. Today, you have accepted me as your servant. Where are all your fanciful, glorious words of praising me? Where has all your bowing your head and taking the dust of my feet gone today? Today is the most auspicious day because you have beat me up. Rivo! You have accepted me as your subordinate, your servant." And Lord Chaitanya, upon hearing this, he understood that it was all a trick. And he became very embarrassed. Transcendentally. And then Sita Thakurani made a nice feast for them and they had nice kirtan like that. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always very, very anxious to become the servant of his devotees. That is the great opulence of renunciation. And that is the beautiful message that continuously resounds in the Bhakti Shastras. And here we find such a beautiful illustration of this. And Bhishma, although in his heart of hearts, as we will read in future days in his prayers, is worshipping the Lord as the exclusive object of all of his love and devotion and worship,
He is accepting Krishna's position of bowing down before him as an expression of his wonderful love in this most extraordinary lila. Is there any questions?
Maharaj, today's wonderful narration of Bhishma Dev, Lord Krishna bowing down to Bhishma Dev, it only gets us to that point of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy of Trinadapi Sunichina Tarurapi Sahishna Manina Manina Kirtanya Siddhari. But so happens that practically it's very difficult for us to follow, even though after hearing so many times that you have to be humble, you have to tolerate, not expect any respect for yourself, but offer all respects to others. You hear, you see also others in a humble position also. But it's very difficult to really apply it practically in our life. So many times we just take the God brothers or God sisters for granted. We see them from a material vision. And then afterwards we try to compare ourselves with them. And afterwards when we do that, we create offense and then we realize that, oh, I should not be doing that. But then again it's the same thing happening again and again and again.
No doubt it is the most difficult thing. To curb the desires of the senses and the mind are so difficult. But the propensities toward sense gratification of the mind and senses is far less than the propensity of our ego. In fact, all our other material desires are all built upon the foundation of the desire of recognition and enjoyment of the ego. To give up all sex desire, to give up all desire for nice foods, to give up all desires for the comforts of the body, is no doubt difficult. But these are all physical desires and mental desires. But they are all situated upon the ego. Therefore, the desire of the ego is the most difficult. And people, even who give up everything of this world, even people who achieve mukti and have no more, have extinguished all physical and mental desires, they are still victims of false pride. They are still subjugated by the desires of their egos. So it is the most subtle and the most powerful. And if you can do that, if you can genuinely become a humble servant, you can please Krishna. And when you please Krishna, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchyate, he can control your mind and senses by his mercy. So this is really the path of bhakti, that we must strive in this direction. We must strive according to our capacity to serve the devotees, to serve Guru Maharaj, to serve Krishna. We must strive to honor and hold this verse, Trinadapi Sunichena, as the most precious goal of our life. This verse, Trinadapi Sunichena, should be the factor in which we evaluate everything we do and everything we say in our life. It should be our guiding light in every circumstance. And God helps those who help themselves. Just like the sparrow
when the ocean took the eggs of the sparrow, the sparrow was so determined to dry up the ocean if the ocean did not return the eggs. Similarly, for us to be genuinely humble, for us to dry up the ocean of false ego that is within us, is more difficult than a sparrow drying an ocean by our own endeavor. But if we simply try, by Krishna's direction, by Guru's direction, then Krishna will be attracted. When the sparrow was drying, it's not that the sparrow took one beak full of water and then Garuda came. She was struggling and striving for some time to prove her determination. Similarly, if we struggle and strive to live according to this principle of Trinarapi Sinichena, Tarorapi Sihishnana, Amani Namana Dena Kirtaniya Sadahari, and we perform our sadhana in a nice way, and we hear continuously every day these wonderful narrations, and we act according to what we learn from our superior authorities, then we attract Krishna's grace. And Krishna, He is the only one who has the power to free us from our false egos. He is the only one who has the power to give us realization of true humility. We have no power ourselves. But by our honest and earnest endeavor, both internally and externally, striving for this perfection, by the mercy of Gurudev, Krishna will most certainly help us and award us that perfection of all realizations. So continue trying. Do not be discouraged. Just like Bhishma, he knew that if I just remember him and faithfully chant his name, he will come here and he will deliver me. So similarly, we are wounded by so many arrows of our own past sinful activities. But if we just know that we're trying to please Krishna by carrying out the order of his representatives, we should know that he will definitely, we should have complete confidence, he will come. He will come at the time when I need him the most, and he will rescue me from this ocean of birth and death. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.